This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, most people agree that the problems of housing and health are the worst part of this country and the most intractable to solve. Housing at the moment is top of the agenda for very obvious reasons. Many families, and they're not all poor people, are affected, but many poor people are homeless, of course, and that's the worst. But there's a new book out. Its author, Eoin O'Brien, is the Sinn Féin spokesperson on housing. He is, like many Sinn Féin deputies, very diligent, and he's written a book. The title is Defects, Living with the Legacy of the Celtic Tiger. Mick Clifford, who is an old friend of ours here on the stand, described it as a devastating critique, and it certainly is that. So it's a pleasure to welcome Eoin O'Brien to the stand. Eoin, this is a harrowing book to read, and it begins, most people remain unaware of the details of these badly constructed apartments and houses, vaguely out there somewhere, but it's not affecting us. The one that most people would recognize would be Priory Hall, and that's where your book begins. Can you tell us the story of Fiacra Daly and Stephanie Meehan and their two children who had bought an apartment in Priory Hall and what happened to them? You open the book with it, and it seems to me to be a good place to start our conversation. What happened to Stephanie and Fiacra?
Absolutely. So Stephanie and Fiacra were two hard-working people. They worked in the restaurant trade out in Howth during the period of the Celtic Tiger. And like a lot of people, they were working hard, long hours, they were renting, and they were very, very keen to get the security of buying their own home. They were actually living in a very nice rental apartment right beside where Priory Hall was being built. And as it was being built, they were kind of looking on, going, God, they looked like wonderful apartments, and you know, maybe we might get a chance to buy. Like a lot of people, they struggled to get mortgages, but eventually they got approval. And they were one of the first families to purchase a property in Priory Hall while it was still being built. And I opened the book with the story of Stephanie, who 2 years into the trauma of having been evacuated from Priory Hall under court order, along with the other 190-odd families, because of very, very serious fire safety defects that were the responsibility of Tom McFeely, the developer, and his company Coalport. Stephanie woke up one morning to find that her partner Fiacra Daly's van was still outside the house some hours after he should have been off to work. She rang him to see where he was, if there was something wrong. There was no answer. And then she went up the stairs to the bedroom that he had slept in that night, only to discover that he was dead. The inquest sometime later, while finding that Fiacra had took his own life, they left an open verdict because he had consumed a considerable amount of alcohol, and therefore a verdict of intentional suicide couldn't be decided by the coroner. But Stephanie and her family are absolutely convinced that it was the stress and the strain, particularly of a hard-working man who felt ashamed that he couldn't provide a safe home for his own family, even though, of course, the defects were not his fault. And having been harassed and harangued by their mortgage lender for a property they couldn't live in, having been moved from one emergency accommodation to another, eventually the pressure just got too bad for him and he broke. And while everybody who lives with defects, whether they're families with pyrite or mica in the west of Ireland or with fire safety defects everywhere else, everybody suffers heavily. What Stephanie and her children, Ushin series, have lost is not just 2 years of their life and their family home. They've lost a father and a loving partner, something they'll never be able to move on from. And that's, I think, a very powerful kind of entry point into how these defects really affect people in ways well beyond just the pounds, shilling and pence of the remediation of the properties.
Yes, and as you work your way through this book, what you realise is that there is a culture in the building industry, in the development industry, but not only there. Newspapers were hyping up during the Celtic Tiger, particularly the Irish Times and the Irish Independent. There's lawyers, there's surveyors, and even at one point there is the Dublin Fire Service who complete an inspection of a development. They give it the all clear, and it isn't fit to have the all clear declared, and in a subsequent inspection that is put right. What struck me reading it was how isolated a couple like Stephanie and Fiacre could be, and all of the other victims of this, and you mentioned mica and pyrite as well. They feel isolated, and every government we've had, up to Owen Murphy as Minister of Housing, want to wash their hands of responsibility for what's happening to the citizens of this country. How do you, and you are highly likely, it seems to me, to be a housing minister, how are you going to deal with the pervasive corruption, negligence, incompetence, and in some cases, animal instinct of this culture around developments, new developments in particular?
Lehman, one of the things I wanted to do in this book is to really understand how it was that the types of bad building and bad building materials that were used, particularly during the Celtic Tiger, although not only then, because there's unfortunately a long history of bad building in the States.
Well, I'll just give you an example. In 2016, a place called Larkfield Hall was given the all clear to be developed. I mean, this isn't Celtic Tiger.
No, exactly.
And what happened was a planning application was submitted to South Dublin County Council in July 2016 for 37 apartments. The application was successful. However, rather than proceed with the development, a Mr. Cosgrave, who was the developer, decided to add some more apartments, and he converted the former gym into 48 apartments. And by 2018, he had 48 tenants in there. This is cowboy stuff, and that's being very unfair to cowboys.
Absolutely. So I suppose I want to understand, how is it possible that people can get away with this, right? And while there has been lots and lots of really good journalism, and you mentioned McClifford, and he's one of a range of good journalists,
of course,
who over the years have exposed the builders, the developers, etc. But nobody ever has really told, until this book, is the political story of the politicians who put in place that self-certification light touch regime that has allowed all this to happen. And likewise, we've yet to have, until hopefully if it's done right in this book, a critique of the reforms, as they're so called, by Phil Hogan after Priory Hall, that still allow something exactly as you said, like Larkfield House, which I deal with in the book, to happen after those reforms. And the key thing is that in other jurisdictions, the state takes on the responsibility not only of setting the regulations, but enforcing those through a very robust independent inspection regime, usually led by local authorities or other state agencies. Such a regime was actually proposed in this state under draft regulations issued by the Department of Environment in 1976. and subsequently strongly supported in a separate independent report by the Law Reform Commission in 1977. And yet, because of the opposition from industry, not just the construction industry, but architects, engineers, and surveyors, government did nothing about it. They sat on their hands and allowed those reports and drafts to gather dust. And even when Justice Keane, who was given the responsibility by the government to do the tribunal of inquiry into the tragic loss of life in the Stardust nightclub in Artane in 1981, even when Justice Keane heavily criticised government for the failure to introduce proper enforcement of building standards and urged the government to fast-track the draft 76 regulations, what government did, both the Fine Gael Labour government in 83 and 84, and then the Fianna Fáil government, particularly after 87, was completely ignore the recommendations and advice of independent experts and instead give industry what they wanted, which is the lightest touch regulatory regime possible. I tell the story in some detail in the book of the passage of this piece of legislation. It's called the Building Control Act from 1984, Stardust, up to its eventual enactment through regulations in 1992. But during all of that time, there were opposition politicians, and in particular, I have to mention Eamon Gilmore and Pronchias de Rossa, who repeatedly warned on the floor of the Dáil to government, both Fine Gael Labour and the Fianna Fáil, that if you allow this self-certification regime to be introduced, then rogue builders and rogue architects will build defective homes and the homeowner will have no comeback. They were dismissed, they were ignored, as was Justice Keane in the Tribunal Report and the Law Reform Commission and the officials in the department in the mid-70s.
Let me just stop you there for a moment. Both of those gentlemen, Gilmore, leader of the Labour Party, and de Rossa, were subsequently in government. This is my point. They, of course, they were fighting for justice, really, for the victims of this. When they got into government, Owen, nothing happened.
Absolutely.
And you have a chapter on the Stardust, and the Stardust families still don't have justice after numerous inquiries. And there was no arson in the Stardust. Expert after expert.
Absolutely.
Of international renown, totally independent, have made it very clear what happened that night. And these people still can't get justice, even from people who were campaigning, assisting them, supporting them, subsequently got into government and did nothing.
And the central problem, in my view, and you're absolutely right to highlight that, is that every government since the Stardust and every government since Priory Hall has been led by either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. And what's really clear when you read the book and when you read all the source material that I use for the book is that there has been a relationship between those two parties in particular and sections of the construction industry. Today, it's more sections of the institutional investors and large developers, which when it comes to a choice between protecting the consumer, the homeowner, or indeed the nightclub attendee, capitulating to the interests of the building industry, government has always capitulated. So the straight answer is, how do we ensure these kinds of things don't happen again, is that we break that relationship and we put in place the kind of building control regime, enforcement regime, that pretty much every independent expert has been calling on government to do for some time. And I mentioned in the book that I authored a report for the Oireachtas Housing Committee in 2018 called Safe as Houses. We had a lot of expert testimony. We had a lot of witnesses from industry and from local government and from academia. We spoke to people involved in building control in other jurisdictions. And that report, which was unanimously supported by all of the members of the committee, made very, very clear, not only do we need 100% redress for the families that are in defective homes through no fault of their own, but we have to have a complete change in the way in which we enforce, because Larkfield House is a really important example.
Yes, it is. And it's contemporary almost.
And it's in my constituency. I know it well. I have worked directly with the residents of there. There are 48 households living in that property. It was built without planning permission, without any building control certification whatsoever. South Dublin County Council is involved in a protracted enforcement proceeding against Cavies Limited, the developer. But what that shows is, even after the much-hyped reforms of building control introduced by Phil Hogan in 2014, it is still possible for a developer to build a heavily defective building with no planning or building control. And for example, while building without planning permission is common and people often try and apply for retention, not submitting certificates, for example, fire certs, disability certs or completion certs during construction is now a criminal offence. It can carry a jail sentence or a hefty fine. And yet here you have, only 15 minutes from where I'm sitting, a development which is still fully tenanted. A significant yes. number of the families in that development came from emergency accommodation, who are obviously now facing uncertainty in terms of what happens in the future. The taxpayer is paying the bill for that accommodation through HAP and Homeless HAP, and it is completely in breach of both planning and building control regulation and subject to lengthy enforcement. And unless the full weight of the law is brought to bear on Cavies and Vincent Cosgrave, its principal director, then that sends a signal to any other rogue builder and architect out there, don't worry, nothing has changed. It's still the same as it was in the bad old days of the Celtic Tiger, which is why we need those reforms and we need them as a matter of urgency.
And the record shows that somehow when people get into government, it isn't just in housing. If you take the hepatitis C scandal, if you take the cervical check scandal, when politicians get into government, they become part of the state. And the state has to be protected. And therefore, protecting the state and its assets is inimical to giving justice to the victims of these scandals. Do you recognize that syndrome? In other words, you have someone like Michael Noonan during the Hep C scandal, threatening with the assistance of the Attorney General of the time, a woman who was a mother of 12, Bridget McColl. And he was representing the state. And he threatened Bridget McColl in a letter when she was very unwell. If she didn't accept the compensation offered because she had decided to go the legal route and get an independent judgment, he would take her to the Supreme Court and they would be looking for costs. Now, he was acting, in his view, as the protector of taxpayers' money and the representative of the state. I'm asking you, in concrete terms, do you recognise that syndrome, Owen, and would you fall victim to it?
First of all, I absolutely recognise that system. I see it every day, and it's one of the reasons why I got involved in politics, because I don't accept that is inevitable. I think it's inevitable when Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael get into
it. It has been in Ireland.
It has.
You have a chapter on the historic dangerous buildings, which is absolutely shocking, but it goes back to 1921.
That's right. And the point I was going to make, and again, I completely agree with you, is our problem in this country is the same two parties have run every single government since the foundation of the state. And smaller parties, when they went into coalition, weren't able to exert the type of influence they thought they were, which is why they ended up betraying so many of the promises they made before, which, of course, is why they remained small parties. And many of those parties are now footnotes in our political history. But I do believe it is possible to have a government that doesn't become a part of the state, but instead transforms the state so it works in the interest of working people. That is absolutely possible. And it's what gets me out of bed every day. It's what motivates me not only to be the politician that I try to be, but also to do things like this book, which is to expose how we got into this mess, but highlight in very, very great detail what it is that needs to be done to fix these problems. And of course, by committing myself to ink on paper in this way, and by making the case for all of these reforms, I would be a very, very foolish politician to go into the Customs House, if I ever have the privilege to be the Minister for Housing, Planning and Local Government, and not implement the reforms I'm calling for. Because if I were to do that, my political career would be very short indeed. So, do I think it's possible to have a government of change, a government that seriously tries to represent the interests of people and act on the principles of justice and equality? Yes, I do. That's what motivates me as a Republican politician every day. And part of the writing of a book like this is to continue that campaign for change. It happens in other jurisdictions, have been politicians at various stages in our own history, although few and far between, who have secured some of that change. And I think the fact that Sinn Féin is now the largest party in the state shows for the first time we have a real possibility of a different kind of government into the future. But of course, only time will tell.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Well, of course, I want to ask you about, well, you talk about a short political career. Eamon Gilmore didn't have a short political career, nor did Phil Hogan, or indeed Crunchius de Rossa. I take your point about the two big parties, but what troubles me reading your book is the complicity of NAMA, the Dublin Fire Service, the City Council, the surveyors. There's a big gang out there who are aligned against someone like Stephanie and Fiacre, and people unfortunate enough to find themselves at the moment, the Mica scandal. This is mostly in Donegal and Mayo, north, west and west, but not solely. Concrete blocks that just crumble. And even now, they're not getting justice. What would you do with the Mica scandal, for example, Owen?
Absolutely. So there would be four changes to the remediation scheme that I would make, and they need to be made. The first is homeowners should get 100% redress, full stop. If you buy any other product anywhere and you take it home and it's defective, you bring it back and you get a refund or your product replaced, and the same principle should apply for your home. The second is there should be a state-backed guarantee for the defective block homes, as there was for Pirate and the foundations, so that if they get a certain amount of work done now, but if further problems arise down the line, they can get access back into the scheme. The third is I would have the housing agency, who actually have done a very good job of the Pirate remediation scheme, I would have them oversee the defective block scheme. Currently, each individual homeowner has to contract out a builder and block manufacturer and negotiate prices and delivery. That should all be done by an agency that has already proven itself to have the ability and competence to do so. And what I would also ensure is that some of the ancillary costs, for example, if you have to move out of your home for a period of time while the remediation is taking place, you'll be eligible for rent supplement, etc. Again, exactly the same treatment as we've given to families affected by pyrite in the foundations. What I will say is this, and you're absolutely right to say that there are many aspects of an individuals and state institutions who see their job as protecting the state itself. But there are also many, many people in those systems who are in their various areas battling to do the right thing. And I come across them all the time.
And you write about them in the book, who people who came to you.
Absolutely. I write about some of the people who came to me privately.
Yes.
But there are also people who in the public domain are doing the right thing as well. And therefore, those people need to be supported and empowered. I mean, for example, one of the very good developments that's happened in recent years is the creation of the Building Control Office in Dublin City, but it's a statewide body. It's headed by Mairead Phelan, the former head of Building Control in Fingal County Council. But the problem of Mairead's office is it's understaffed by government, and that needs to change. But Mairead and her staff are doing an exceptional job in trying to highlight the need and advance ever greater levels of building control, greater levels of local authority inspections. The housing agency, for example, I've mentioned, they've done an exceptionally good job under the Pyrite Remediation Scheme. And while the Dublin Fire Brigade, I think exactly as you mentioned with respect to Balmain, didn't find anything in their first inspection in 2011 and subsequently found significant fire safety defects in 2012, other senior figures in the Fire Brigade, for example, gave testimony to the Stardust Tribunal inquiry. Very, very important and damning evidence. So there are lots and lots of good people out there who are doing the right thing. And what we need to be doing in the political process is supporting and assisting those people, both through better legislation, better regulations, better resourcing, but also standing up and verbally and I suppose politically supporting them to continue to do the good work that they're doing. If government had done back in Priory Hall what many people were privately advising government to do, which is to meet with the families. Keep in mind, Phil Hogan as minister for 2 years refused to meet the Priory Hall families. He solve all the problems.
He said it wasn't his problem, it wasn't his business to deal with.
Exactly. But if he had met them at the very outset, he would have been able to do what he did when he eventually met them, albeit tragically after the death of Fiacre Daly.
Yes.
Within a matter of weeks after Fiacre's death and Stephanie Meehan writing the most powerful letter to Enda Kenny, which was published. Government sat around the table with the banks and with the homeowners. They found a resolution and redress was secured. And for all of the other families, they've been able to move on. But that came far too late for Stephanie. So one of the lessons for politicians today, whether they're in government or those of us who would like to be in government in the near future, is act when you can. Act as early as you can. The Mica and Pyrite families in the west of Ireland have been campaigning for a decade. And yes, as each year passes, the cost of the remediation gets bigger and bigger. The stress and impact on the families gets worse and worse. So intervene early, intervene when you can, and intervene on the basis of justice and fairness. And I think if we had governments that did that, many of these issues would get resolved much earlier and at a much lower cost to the taxpayer.
NAMA was also selling Dodd homes, correct?
The issue around NAMA is really shocking. And our difficulty, of course, is proving a lot of the things that we believe is quite
difficult. These are the pillars. These are the pillars of the state we're talking about here on.
Exactly. And one of the problems with NAMA, and there are many problems, is that the legislation that was put in place insisted that NAMA had to make the maximum commercial return for the state. Right?
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible. And that Section 10 of the Act trumps all other things. So, for example, we've had cases where developers built effective developments. So Bruna Shunna from Paddybark Builders in Shannon and County Clare is a case in point. The debts that Paddybark Builders Limited had left when he went into liquidation found their way into NAMA. A portion of that development hadn't been finished. So NAMA appoints a receiver, the receiver gets building contractors, they finish out the development. But rather than using the proceeds of those units to be sold to remediate the rest of the development, which is what should have happened.
Yes.
NAMA, and in particular the receiver acting on behalf of NAMA, and this is one of two cases I talk about in the book, ignores those ethical obligations, in my view, and simply acts under the very, very rigid legal framework that had been given by Michael Noonan. To such an extent that you have new apartments being finished and sold off, while homeowners, to no fault of their own, are being hit with bills of 10 to 20,000 euros apiece. And all the while, every single one of the developers that I talk about in this book walks away scot-free. Many of them are back building again. Some of them are in very large, newly constructed companies getting significant state aid. Other are minor players in the industry. But not a single one of the builders or developers responsible for the five, in case six, examples that I gave in the book, one in Clare, one in Donegal, and four in Dublin, none of them have ever been held to account. And that's also a shocking indictment of the failure of our building control regime.
Yes, I mean, Vincent Cosgrave is a good example. He flagrantly abused the planning system and built 8 extra apartments, and he's walking around town somewhere. It would be remiss of me not to mention Tom McFeely, and I don't do this to you didn't avoid it, and you it's in the book. He is a former Republican of long standing, a prisoner in the North, and he is quite brazen. And from 2020, he's been able to operate. He was the developer on the Prairie Hall project. And in fairness to you, you give his history and his background. I only make that point because people would think wrong of me not to make that point. I don't make it to score a political point. What I want to do, Owen, is ask you about now. The Housing for All policy, Dara O'Brien, housing minister, is engaged in promoting and resourcing. There was a Kenny report, the Kenny report of 1974. It really was a powerful document, and it's still there. And it points out that in order to do what we need to do about land, without which you can't build any houses, you need a constitutional change, and you would need a referendum. Do you accept that you would need constitutional change? And do you accept, if we were to implement the Kenny report, it would make life much easier for the people of this country and people who are genuinely interested in building for people decent housing? Will you, if you are the minister, resurrect the Kenny report and see that it's implemented?
So first of all, the Kenny report is often discussed and very often misrepresented. I mean, in Housing for All, for example, they're claiming that they're implementing an aspect of Kenny, when in fact the land value capture proposal that's in the proposal or in the housing plan is something actually Justice Kenny was against, because it will do nothing to address land price inflation. The Kenny report is really important because its central proposition was local authorities should be able to apply to the courts to buy strategic tracts of land off private developers at their existing use value. When Kenny was making that report, it was just at the end of the building boom of the 1960s. Most of the land he was talking about had been an existing use value of agricultural land with a 25% uplift. For those of us who advocate implementing a Kenny-style mechanism to control land value speculation today, you would have to do it slightly differently. Otherwise, you'd get fleeced, because some of the existing use value of that land is higher than agricultural value, and a 25% uplift would probably be too much. But the core principle is absolutely correct. Local authorities should be able to acquire that land, not at the CPO value, which would be the market price, which is currently the case, but at the existing use value plus an uplift. I'm just not convinced that 25% would be acceptable. I think some uplift maybe, but not at that level.
If you were housing minister in a Sinn Féin-led administration, which is highly probable in my view, would you hold a referendum were it to be necessary?
So the straight answer to that question is yes, I would enshrine the right to housing in the Constitution. But I want to make an important point. You do not need a referendum to change Article 4444 to do the Kenny report. That was the strong view of Justice Kenny, but it is also the strong view of some of the country's leading constitution and property law experts, particularly some of the professors emerging in Trinity. And what they're saying, and this is a really important point, is that for far too long, governments have hid behind the Constitution, using it as an excuse not to take on vested property interests. Not because there's a constitutional prohibition on such a thing, but because they don't want to take on those interests politically.
Yes.
An example of that is Part 5 of the Planning and Development Act. When Fianna Fáil introduced Part 5, which, as people will know, ensured that 20% of private sector developments would be sold, essentially at existing use value plus cost to the local authorities for social affordable housing, the government of the day actually referred that to the Supreme Court, a very smart decision. And that Supreme Court decision is really important, because what it says very clearly is there is significant scope for government to constrain private property rights when it is in the interests of social justice and the common good, when it is in the interests of public policy considerations, so long as it is proportionate and people are adequately compensated. So I do not believe, for example, for a moment, that we couldn't have a 3-year ban on rent increases on constitutional grounds. But not only do I not believe you don't need a referendum to have a ban on rent increases, some of the country's leading constitutional property law experts agree with me and have written about it in various publications. So do we need a referendum? Absolutely. But do we have to wait for that referendum to have policies and legislation that protects the general good, particularly in terms of reducing property prices, rents, etc.? Those things can happen anyway. And this hiding behind the constitution, as Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Labour, unfortunately, have been doing for decades, is really in many cases an indication of a lack of political will rather than a legal ability to make the kinds of changes that are required.
Okay, just a final question. On reading the book, which I would recommend to anyone who really, has a problem with housing and needs guidance, but B, to people considering how this country is run by the political class and their allies in the professions. It's a daunting task you would face, and your party, if you got into government. And the reason it's so daunting is the quasi-legal behaviour of a mob that ranges through the professions, and it's actually illustrated in the Stardust case, for example, very graphically indeed. They still can't get justice for their loved ones and closure on the Stardust tragedy. And although you have a little chapter about the Stardust, it is incomplete because it doesn't deal with the serious issues raised. Are you daunted, and are you prepared to take on the people, the rogue element in official Ireland that hold the commanding heights of the professions and indeed that are party to the cowboys who have built so many defective houses in this country?
The straight answer is absolutely yes. And one of the reasons why...
Are you daunted by it when you look at the scale of it? And your book really exposes the scale of it.
I'm not daunted by it. I'm not naive, Eamon. I've been a political activist, as you know, north and south.
I don't think you are. No one's ever accused you of that.
For over 25 years. So I'm in no way underestimating the scale of the challenge. But I suppose if I compare the job I have to do with the circumstances that, for example, Stephanie Meehan has to live with, or Michael Doherty, yes, whose home is collapsing around him because of defective, yes, block. One of the things, when you spend so much time with people who have experienced those things, one of the things that makes you realize is you have to redouble your efforts as a politician if you're serious about social justice and fairness in our society. So is it a daunting challenge? Yes, it is. Am I naive about that? No, I'm not. Am I absolutely committed to try and make the types of change that, whether in this book or my last book about public housing or in our broader social, economic and political agenda, I'm absolutely committed to it. That's what gets me out of bed every single day. Can we solve all of these problems overnight? No, but I want to be part of a government that is honest with people, that tells people what our clear priorities are, that tries to implement real radical reforms and changes to the way in which things are done in this country, north and south. And even as we're implementing programs of reform, if things aren't going the way we planned, then to be honest with people and come back and say what we've tried isn't working, so we're going to try something else. People want to see you work hard to make the reforms that are there, and then to be honest with them when things aren't working as planned and recalibrate and refocus and put in place another plan. So am I daunted by it? I'm not, but it is a daunting challenge. But it is the stories of Stephanie and Michael and the Carews and others, I think, that motivates me every day to say, I put myself up for this position. People have put their trust and faith in me by electing me to the Dáil. And I don't want to be, and I have to say, I give credit to Eamon Gilmore and Prudhoe Easter-Rosser for what they did in opposition. I don't want to be a politician like them in government, having promised so much in opposition and failed to deliver. And if I thought that's where I was headed, I would resign now and do everybody a favour. But I firmly believe positive, progressive governments are possible. We've just never had one in this country. And the sooner we have an election to change this appalling government and put in place a government that puts the people first, the better for all of us.
So your slogan won't be "Politics is the art of the possible."
I'm a Gramscian, so it's optimism of the will and pessimism of the intellect, I suppose. But I understand how difficult things are. But I believe change is possible, and a more profound degree of change than we've ever seen before in the history of the state. And I want to be part of a government that delivers that change.
Okay, Ona Brin, TD, spokesperson for housing for Sinn Féin. Thank you very much for joining us. And I just remind listeners that the book is in the shops now. It's called Defects, Living with the Legacy of the Celtic Tiger. And Ona Brin, its author, may well be Minister for Housing before very long. Thank you very much, Owen. Thanks to all our listeners. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.